This morning he had been so heart-sick and weary he could scarcely stand, but now his fury was on him, filling him with strength. Men called out to him as he crossed the castle yard, but Ned ignored them in his haste. He would have run, but he was still the king's hand, and a hand must keep his dignity. He was aware of the eyes that followed him, and the muttered voices wondering what he would do. The castle was a modest holding, a half-day's ride south of the Trident. The royal party had made themselves the uninvited guests of its lord, Sir Raymond Darry, while the hunt for Arya and the butcher's boy was conducted on both sides of the river. They were not welcome visitors. Sir Raymond lived under the king's peace, but his family had fought beneath Rhaegar's dragon banners at the Trident, and his three older brothers had died there, a truth neither Robert nor Sir Raymond had forgotten. With king's men, Darry men, Lannister men, and Stark men all crammed into a castle far too small for them, tensions burned hot and heavy. The king had appropriated Sir Raymond's audience chamber, and that was where Ned found them. The room was crowded when he burst in. Too crowded, he thought. Left alone, he and Robert might have been able to settle the matter amicably. Robert was slumped in Darry's high seat at the far end of the room, his face closed and sullen. Cersei Lannister and her son stood beside him. The queen had her hand on Joffrey's shoulder. Thick, silken bandages still covered the boy's arm. Arya stood in the centre of the room, alone but for Jorri Cassel, every eye upon her. "Arya!" Ned called out loudly. He went to her, his boots ringing on the stone floor. When she saw him, she cried out and began to sob. Ned went to one knee and took her in his arms. She was shaking. "I'm sorry," she sobbed. "I'm sorry. I'm sorry." "I know," he said. She felt so tiny in his arms, nothing but a scrawny little girl. It was hard to see how she had caused so much trouble. "Are you hurt?" "No." Her face was dirty, and her tears left pink tracks down her cheeks. "Hungry some. I ate some berries, but there was nothing else." "We'll feed you soon enough," Ned promised. He rose to face the king. "What is the meaning of this?" His eyes swept the room, searching for friendly faces. But for his own men, they were few enough. Sir Raymond Darry guarded his look well. Lord Renly wore a half-smile that might mean anything, and Elsa Barristan was grave. The rest were Lannister men, and hostile. Their only good fortune was that both Jaime Lannister and Sandor Clegane were missing, leading searches north of the Trident. "Why was I not told that my daughter had been found?" Ned demanded, his voice ringing. "Why was she not brought to me at once?" He spoke to Robert, but it was Cersei Lannister who answered. "How dare you speak to your king in that manner?" At that, the king stood. "Quiet, woman," he snapped. He straightened in his seat. "I'm sorry, Ned. I never meant to frighten the girl. It seemed best to bring her here and get the business done with quickly." "And what business is that?" Ned put ice in his voice. The queen stepped forward. "You know full well, Stark, this girl of yours attacked my son, her and her butcher's boy. That animal of hers tried to tear his arm off." "That's not true," Arya said loudly. "She just bit him a little. He was hurting Micah." "Joff told us what happened," the queen says. "You and the butcher's boy beat him with clubs while you set your wolf on him." "That's not how it was," Arya said, close to tears. Ned put a hand on her shoulder. "Yes, it is," Prince Joffrey insisted. "They all attacked me, and she threw Lion's Tooth in the river." Ned noticed that he did not so much as glance at Arya as he spoke. "Liar!" Arya yelled. "Shut up!" the prince yelled back. "Enough!" the king roared, rising from his seat, his voice thick with irritation. Silence fell. He glared at Arya through his thick beard. "Now, child, you will tell me what happened. Tell it all, and tell it true. It is a great crime to lie to a king." Then he looked over at his son. "And when she is done, You will have your turn. Until then, hold your tongue. As Arya began her story, Ned heard the door open behind him. He glanced back and saw Vaen Poole enter with Sansa. They stood quietly at the back of the hall as Arya spoke. When she got to the part where she threw Joffrey's sword in the middle of the trident, Renly Baratheon began to laugh. The king bristled. "Sir Barristan, escort my brother from the hall before he chokes." Lord Renly stifled his laughter. "My brother is too kind. I can find the door myself." He bowed to Joffrey. "Perchance later you'll tell me how a 9-year-old girl, the size of a wet rat, managed to disarm you with a broom-handle and throw your sword in the river." As the door swung shut behind him, Ned heard him say, "Lion's tooth," and guffaw once more. Prince Joffrey was pale as he began his very different version of events. When his son was done talking, the king rose heavily from his seat, looking like a man who wanted to be anywhere but here. "What in all the seven hells am I supposed to make of this? He says one thing, she says another." "They were not the only ones present," Ned said. "Sansa, come here." Ned had heard her version of the story the night Arya had vanished. He knew the truth. "Tell us what happened." His eldest daughter stepped forward hesitantly. She was dressed in blue velvets trimmed with white, a silver chain around her neck. Her thick auburn hair had been brushed until it shone. She blinked at her sister, then at the young prince. "I don't know," she said tearfully, looking as though she wanted to bolt. "I don't remember. Everything happened so fast I didn't see." "You rotten!" Arya shrieked. She flew at her sister like an arrow, knocking Sansa down to the ground, pummeling her. "Liar! Liar! Liar! Liar!" "Arya, stop it!" Ned shouted. Jorah pulled her off her sister, kicking. Sansa was pale and shaking as Ned lifted her back to her feet. "Are you hurt?" he asked, but she was staring at Arya, and she did not seem to hear. "The girl is as wild as that filthy animal of hers," Cersei Lannister said. "Robert, I want her punished." "Seven hells," Robert swore. "Cersei, look at her, she's a child. What will you have me do? Whip her through the streets? Damn it, children, fight! It's over. No lasting harm was done." The queen was furious. "Joff will carry those scars for the rest of his life." Robert Baratheon looked at his eldest son. "So he will. Perhaps they will teach him a lesson. Ned, see that that daughter of yours is disciplined. I will do the same with my son." "Gladly, your grace," Ned said with vast relief. Robert started to walk away, but the queen was not done. "And what of the dire wolf?" she called after him. "What of the beast that savaged your son?" The king stopped, turned back, frowned. "Oh, I'd forgotten about the damn wolf." Ned could see Arya tense in Jorah's arms. Jorah spoke up quickly. "We found no trace of the dire wolf, your grace." Robert did not look unhappy. "No, so be it." The queen raised her voice. "100 golden dragons to the man who brings me its skin." "A costly pelt," Robert grumbled. "I want no part of this woman. You can damn well buy your furs with Lannister gold." The queen regarded him coolly. "I had not thought you so niggardly. The king I'd thought to wed would have laid a wolfskin across my bed before the sun went down." Robert's face darkened with anger. "That would be a fine trick, without a wolf." "We have a wolf," Cersei Lannister said. Her voice was very quiet, but her green eyes shone with triumph. It took them all a moment to comprehend her words, but when they did, the king shrugged irritably. "As you will. Have Sir Ilyen see to it." "Robert, you cannot mean this," Ned protested. The king was in no mood for more argument. "Enough, Ned. I will hear no more. A dire wolf is a savage beast. Sooner or later it would have turned on your girl the same way the other did on my son. Get her a dog. She'll be happier for it." That was when Sansa finally seemed to comprehend. Her eyes were frightened as they went to her father.
He doesn't mean Lady, does he?
She saw the truth on his face.
No, she said, no, not Lady. Lady didn't bite anybody. She's good.
Lady wasn't there, Arya shouted, angry. Leave her alone.
Stop them, Sansa pleaded. Don't let them do it, please. Please, it wasn't Lady, it was Nymeria. Arya did it. You can't, it wasn't Lady. Don't let them hurt Lady. I'll make her be good, I promise, I promise.
She started to cry. All Ned could do was take her in his arms and hold her while she wept. He looked across the room at Robert, his old friend, closer than any brother. Please, Robert, for the love you bear me, for the love you bore my sister, please. The king looked at them for a long moment, then turned his eyes on his wife. Damn you, Cersei, he said with loathing. Ned stood, gently disengaging himself from Sansa's grasp. All the weariness of the past 4 days had returned to him. "Do it yourself, then, Robert," he said in a voice cold and sharp as steel. "At least have the courage to do it yourself." Robert looked at Ned with flat, dead eyes and left without a word, his footsteps heavy as lead. Silence filled the hall. "Where is the direwolf?" Cersei Lannister asked when her husband was gone. Beside her, Prince Joffrey was smiling. "The beast is chained up outside the gatehouse, Your Grace," Sir Barristan Selmy answered reluctantly. "Send for Ilion Payne." "No," Ned said. "Jorry, take the girls back to their rooms and bring me ice." The words tasted of bile in his throat, but he forced them out. "If it must be done, I will do it." Cersei Lannister regarded him suspiciously. "You, Stark? Is this some trick? Why would you do such a thing?" They were all staring at him, but it was Sansa's look that cut. "She is of the North. She deserves better than a butcher." He left the room with his eyes burning, and his daughter's wails echoing in his ears, and found the direwolf pup where they chained her. Ned sat beside her for a moment. "Lady," he said, tasting the name. He never paid much attention to the names the children had picked, but looking at her now, he knew that Sansa had chosen well. She was the smallest of the litter, the prettiest, the most gentle and trusting. She looked at him with bright golden eyes, and he ruffled her thick grey fur. Shortly, Jorry brought him ice. When it was over, he said, "Choose 4 men and have them take the body north. Bury her at Winterfell." "All that way?" Jorry said, astonished. "All that way," Ned affirmed. "The Lannister woman shall never have this skin." He was walking back to the tower to give himself up to sleep at last, when Sandor Clegane and his riders came pounding through the castle gates back from the hunt. There was something slung over the back of his destrier, a heavy shape wrapped in a bloody cloak. "No sign of your daughter, Hand," the hound rasped down. "But the Dane was not wholly wasted. We got her little pet." He reached back and shoved the burden off, and it fell with a thud in front of Ned. Bending, Ned pulled back the cloak, dreading the words he would have to find for Arya. But it was not Nymeria after all. It was the butcher's boy, Micah, his body covered in dried blood. He had been cut almost in half from shoulder to waist by some terrible blow struck from above.
"You rode him down?" Ned said.
The hound's eyes seemed to glitter through the steel of that hideous dog's head helm.
"He ran." He looked at Ned's face and laughed, But not very fast.
Bran.
It seemed as though he had been falling for years. Fly, a voice whispered in the darkness, but Bran did not know how to fly, so all he could do was fall. Maester Luwin made a little boy of clay, baked him until he was hard and brittle, dressed him in Bran's clothes, and flung him off a roof. Bran remembered the way he shattered. But I never fall, he said, falling. The ground was so far below him, he could barely make it out through the grey mist that whirled around him, but he could feel how fast he was falling, and he knew what was waiting for him down there. Even in dreams you could not fall forever. He would wake up in the instant before he hit the ground, he knew. You always wake up in the instant before you hit the ground.
And if you don't? The voice asked.
The ground was closer now. Still far, far away, 1,000 miles away, but closer than it had been. It was cold here in the darkness. There was no sun, no stars, only the ground below, coming up to smash him, and the grey mists and the whispering voice. He wanted to cry.
Not cry, fly.
I can't fly, Bran said. I can't.
How do you know? Have you ever tried?
The voice was high and thin. Bran looked around to see where it was coming from. A crow was spiraling down with him, just out of reach, following him as he fell. Help me, he said.
I'm trying, the crow replied. Say, got any corn?
Bran reached into his pocket as the darkness spun dizzily around him. When he pulled his hand out, golden kernels slid from between his fingers into the air. They fell with him. The crow landed on his hand and began to eat.
Are you really a crow? Bran asked. Are you really fallen?
The crow asked back.
It's just a dream, Bran said. Is it? Asked the crow.
I'll wake up when I hit the ground, Bran told the bird.
You'll die when you hit the ground, the crow said.
It went back to eating corn. Bran looked down. He could see mountains now, their peaks white with snow, and the silver thread of rivers in dark woods. He closed his eyes and began to cry.
That won't do any good, the crow said. I told you, the answer is flying, not crying. How hard can it be? I'm doing it.
The crow took to the air and flapped around Bran's hand.
You have wings, Bran pointed out. Maybe you do, too.
Bran felt along his shoulders, groping for feathers.
There are different kinds of wings, the crow said.
Bran was staring at his arms, his legs. He was so skinny, just skin stretched taut over bones. Had he always been so thin? He tried to remember. A face swam up to him out of the grey mist, shining with light, golden. The things I do for love, it said. Bran screamed. The crow took to the air, cawing.
Not that, it shrieked at him. Forget that. You do not need it now. Put it aside. Put it away.
It landed on Bran's shoulder and pecked at him, and the shining gold face was gone. Bran was falling faster than ever. The grey mist howled around him as he plunged towards the earth below.
What are you doing to me? He asked the crow tearfully. Teaching you how to fly.
I can't fly.
You're flying right now.
I'm falling.
Every flight begins with a fall, the crow said. Look down.
I'm afraid.
Look down.
Bran looked down and felt his insides turn to water. The ground was rushing up at him now. The whole world was spread out below him, a tapestry of white and brown and green. He could see everything so clearly that for a moment he forgot to be afraid. He could see the whole realm and everyone in it. He saw Winterfell as the eagles see it, the tall towers looking squat and stubby from above, the castle walls just lines in the dirt. He saw Maester Luwin on his balcony, studying the sky through a polished bronze tube and frowning as he made notes in a book. He saw his brother Rob, taller and stronger than he remembered him, practicing swordplay in the yard with real steel in his hand. He saw Hodor,
the simple giant from the stables, carrying an anvil to Micken's forge, hefting it onto his shoulder as easily as another man might heft a bale of hay. At the heart of the godswood, the great white weirwood brooded over its reflection in the black pool, its leaves rustling in a chill wind. When it felt Bran watching, it lifted its eyes from the still waters and stared back at him knowingly. He looked east. He saw a galley racing across the waters of the Bight. He saw his mother sitting alone in a cabin, looking at a blood-stained knife on a table in front of her, as the rowers pulled at their oars, and Sir Roderick leaned across a rail, shaking and heaving. A storm was gathering ahead of them, a vast dark roaring, lashed by lightning, but somehow they could not see it. He looked south, and saw the great blue-green rush of the Trident. He saw his father pleading with the king, his face etched with grief. He saw Sansa crying herself to sleep at nights, and he saw Arya watching in silence and holding her secrets hard in her heart. There were shadows all around them. One shadow was dark as ash, with a terrible face of a hound. Another was armored like the sun, golden and beautiful. Over them both loomed a giant in armor made of stone. But when he opened his visor, there was nothing inside but darkness and thick black blood. He lifted his eyes and saw clear across the narrow sea, to the free cities and the green Dothraki sea and beyond, to Vaes Dothrak under its mountain, to the fable lands of the Jade Sea, to Ashai by the shadow, where dragons stirred beneath the sunrise. Finally he looked north. He saw the wall, shining like blue crystal, and his bastard brother John sleeping alone in a cold bed, his skin growing pale and hard as the memory of all warmth fled from him. And he looked past the wall, past endless forests cloaked in snow, past the frozen shore and the great blue-white rivers of ice and the dead plains where nothing grew or lived. North and north and north he looked, to the curtain of light at the end of the world, and then beyond that curtain. He looked deep into the heart of winter, and then he cried out, afraid, and the heat of his tears burned on his cheeks.
"Now you know," the crow whispered, as it sat on his shoulder. "Now you know why you must live."
"Why?" Bran said, not understanding, falling.
"Because winter is coming."
Bran looked at the crow on his shoulder, and the crow looked back. It had three eyes, and the third eye was full of a terrible knowledge. Bran looked down. There was nothing below him now but snow and cold and death. A frozen wasteland where jagged blue-white spires of ice waited to embrace him. They flew up at him like spears. He saw the bones of a thousand other dreamers impaled upon their points. He was desperately afraid. "Can a man still be brave if he's afraid?" he heard his own voice saying, small and far away. And his father's voice replied to him, "That's the only time a man can be brave."
"How, Bran?" the crow urged. "Choose, fly or die."
Death reached for him, screaming. Bran spread his arms and flew. Wings unseen drank the wind and filled and pulled him upward. The terrible needles of ice receded below him. The sky opened up above.
Bran soared. It was better than climbing. It was better than anything. The world grew small beneath him. "I'm flying!" he cried out in delight. "I've noticed," said the three-eyed crow.
It took to the air, flapping its wings in his face, slowing him, blinding him. He faltered in the air as its pinions beat against his cheeks. Its beak stabbed at him fiercely, and Bran felt a sudden blinding pain in the middle of his forehead, between his eyes. "What are you doing?" he shrieked. The crow opened his beak and cawed at him, a shrill scream of fear. and the grey mist shuddered and swirled around him and ripped away like a veil, and he saw that the crow was really a woman, a serving woman, with long black hair, and he remembered her from somewhere, from Winterfell. Yes, that was it. He remembered her now, and then he realized that he was in Winterfell, in a bed high in some chilly tower room, and the black-haired woman dropped a basin of water to shatter on the floor and ran down the steps shouting, "He's awake! He's awake! He's awake!"